Chris Carey is in the house. Chris volunteers his time every week to select and painstakingly research our classic pick of the week. And when I was able to take over the home stretch for Kathy when she stepped into the executive director role, I started haranguing Chris to come on the air with me and talk about what he learns. He does all this research. So I was like, why don't you come on the air and let's geek out on that together and share it. And so I am so glad that that's now a part of a tradition of how we do things around here.
Yeah, well, I've been coming in, what, 4 years maybe?
Yeah, thereabouts. Yeah. Four, crazy.
It's crazy.
It's crazy and lovely. So yeah. Thank you again. And thank you for bringing in Depeche Mode.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, so that's... that's what's kind of cool is that when I realized just a few days ago, I realized that Some Great Reward, Depeche Mode's fourth studio record, came out 35 years ago this month. So it came out in 1984. Depeche Mode is from Basildon, Essex, which is a smaller town outside of London. They formed in 1980 with Dave Gahan, Martin Gore, Andy Fletcher, and Vince Clark. What's kind of interesting about this is I don't think it's the first act, but it's one of the very first acts to completely be a synthesizer band. So all four of them were playing synths and keyboards. They formed their name from a French fashion magazine called Depeche Mode, which means, translates roughly, hurried fashion or hurled fashion. They got signed by David Miller not long out of high school. They all got together in high school, and within a year of being out of high school, they got signed to Mute Records, the famous new wave electronic industrial label out of London. And it was founded by Daniel Miller in 1978. He signed them. A lot of other great bands were on that label. And what's cool, too, is that Daniel Miller also ended up working with them on their first first seven albums. He was a co-producer on those records. Their first couple of records that they did were a little bit more upbeat than this one. Their first record came out, Speak and Spell, came out in 81. And not long after that album, even though they had a couple of hits with it, including Dreamin' of Me and Just Can't Get Enough, Vince Clark left the band and he formed Yaz in 1982. And then not long after that, he formed Erasure in 1985. So it's kind of funny. He dropped out of a soon-to-be super successful band, and then he formed another pretty successful band, and then another pretty successful band. So their second and third, though, albums, Depeche Mode didn't do quite as well. They got some attention, but really for the first three albums, Depeche Mode was kind of completely unknown in the U.S., save for a few really hardcore people that dove into underground stuff. When they decided to go into the studio here, it was kind of, you could look at this record kind of as a transitional record. I mean, it still sounds a little bit like their earlier stuff, but this was the first time they kind of got darker. Before, they were kind of a little bit more upbeat and poppy, and kind of you could group them in kind of that neo-romantic movement with bands like Spandau Ballet and Duran Duran and ABC and Simple Minds. And they decided to get a little bit more darker with this record. And this record, too, is if I kind of think they developed the sound that most people think of when you think of Depeche Mode, kind of
I would
dark.
I would agree. This is when they found their voice, and
they
that
found
regard.
Their voice, and
found
so
their
it's
dark
kind of,
voice.
It's kind of dancey, but kind of dark and industrial at the same time. So you know, this was something that the really hardcore kids listening to Knights of Reb and Ministry could agree with the kids that were not into that heavier stuff. But Daniel Miller, like I said, he produced this record. This is like the fourth record that he was co-producer on with Depeche Mode, but it was the first time that Gareth Jones showed up on the record as a co-producer credit too. He worked on a few more albums with them, and he's kind of seen as a guy who kind of a digital music pioneer. He worked with them on this record, Black Celebration, Music for the Masses, and then he went on to work with Wire and Erasure and Nick Cave, and he actually co-produced Interpol's Turn on the Bright Lights, which I love that record.
That's a fantastic record.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Commercially, like I said, this was where they broke into the U.S. This was their most successful album to date. It was their first platinum record. And before this, nobody really knew them. And then they came out with People Are People, which was a huge smash hit, not just in the U.S. and the U.K., but in Canada, all over Europe, Australia, New Zealand. And after that, they got huge, and people started going to all their shows, and then they kind of became the superstar group that they were.
The initial critical response
was kind of mixed at the time, but over the years, people have come to see that it was that kind of really defining album, and a lot of other bands, you know, really have gravitated towards this album and Black Celebration and Music for the Masses. And those kind of those, you know, and then Violator was their huge hit that sold millions and millions of copies. But it's kind of these three records kind of in the middle of Depeche Mode's career that I think kind of really did put them where they are and put them on the map.
All right. We're talking about Depeche Mode here, our classic pick of the week.
I was just timing you. I just wanted to see how long you were going to go today.
How did I do?
You did all right. A little long, Chris Carey.
Yeah, I tend to be long-winded.
I usually get to hear the whole review over the weekend before Monday anyway.
I can be verbose.
And I hear the songs like 10 times in a row.
All right. It was Black Celebration time all Sunday and Monday, huh?
Yes, it was a wonderful holiday weekend in our house. Nice and cheery. This was a good pick. I thought this was good.
Well, I mean, it is. It's the first definitive album from a band that sold more than 100 million albums worldwide. They estimated more than 3 million people have seen them in concert, including the famous concert that they ended up being the 101 Live album that came out in 1988, I believe. It was on the Music for the Masses tour. It was sold out, LA Coliseum, 60,000 people at one show.
So this has actually become a natural progression for Chris to do a classic pick, because one of the things that he used to do was he would book Plush, the club Plush, and he would have cover nights almost once a month. And so all the musicians would have to come in and learn other artists and play their music. So this has been a great sort of extension in Chris's hobby career to listen to this music and do all this research. So I thank you for it. And I know folks like it.
Yeah, I like it. But there's so many good albums, and sometimes I do a huge album that everybody knows, and sometimes I do an album that's kind of underground, but it's really influential and amazing. And so, yeah, that's kind of the only criteria, 20 years old and really good.
Well, and part of the reason we do this isn't just because it's a lovely and delightful nerd out session for you and I, and because it's an extension of what you're doing before, but also because it's emblematic and reflective of how we look at music at this station. We are all about championing new music, local music, discovering music outside of all genres, but also all eras. And so we really believe in honoring music history, revisiting it, learning from what it has to illuminate about the history of music and what music can be, because that's what our listeners care about. They care about music in a broad spectrum way, and that means from this year to decades and decades previously to what's to come. And so thank you for being an important part of the way that we kind of look at music holistically.
Yep.
Kathy, you scared him now. He's no more talking.
Well, yeah, no, she's in here timing me. I was gonna go on an analogy about how this, like, music, looking at music like cladistically, like, is an evolutionary standpoint, but I won't go into that.
Can you pick up dog food on your way home, Bim?
Maybe.
Believe it or not, we are discussing the classic pick of the week. Chris, anything to say about our first song that we're gonna play?
Mm-mm.
No, I won't say anything.